Welcome to this CMU Insights at the Great Escape mini online seminar, providing some background insights ahead of this year's CMU at the Great Escape conference. CMU Insights at the Great Escape is basically four conferences in one. Over 2 days in two venues, we will present a day of content around four separate topics. Those topics are media, drugs, export, and royalties. The media conference, on the Thursday of the Great Escape, will look at the state of the music media in 2017 and how you make money out of music journalism and music radio in the digital age. The drugs conference, also on the Thursday, will consider the rules and regulations around policing the consumption of drugs at music events, venues, and festivals, and about the music community's role in educating its consumers about how to use drugs safely. We'll also consider drug taking within the music community and how the music industry can better support those artists and people working behind the scenes who develop issues around addiction. The Export Conference, taking place on the Friday of Great Escape, will provide lots of practical advice for how you can take new artists and launch them into new markets, and the various systems and programs and funding initiatives and festivals that are out there to help with that process. And finally, the Royalties Conference, also on Friday, will follow the money that comes in from recordings and songs. We'll track the money as it flows into the music industry through record companies and distributors, publishers and collecting societies, and finally to the artists and songwriters who create the music that generates all that cash. We'll look at the licensing of live music, at the sync, production music and original commission business, and at the transparency challenges around the increasingly important streaming revenue stream. But first, I'm going to review the key developments in the music industry over the last 12 months and explain how we'll be covering some of those key trends and developments in our four conferences at The Great Escape. On the recorded music side, the key trends in 2016 were the same as the key trends in 2015. That is to say that downloads were tanking, CD sales continued to decline slowly, and streaming was booming. Sufficiently booming, in fact, that despite the continued declines in CD sales and in downloads, the recorded music business is now properly back in growth. Worldwide, recorded music revenues were up 5.9% last year, according to the figures recently put out by the International Federation of the Phonographic Industry. It is paid-for subscription streaming that is driving the return to growth, and Spotify and Apple Music in particular. Free streaming platforms, and especially YouTube, continue to pay in relatively modest royalties despite the high levels of consumption. The music industry continues to have a love-hate relationship with YouTube, who the labels and publishers argue is exploiting an element of copyright law, called the safe harbour, to secure much more preferential deals from the music rights owners compared to the audio streaming services and the paid-for streaming services like Spotify and Apple. To that end, the music industry has been trying to get copyright law rewritten to reduce the reach of this safe harbour, to force the hand of services like YouTube, so that the labels and the publishers, and therefore the artists and songwriters, can get a better royalty out of the Google Video site. This is pretty much where we were when we put the spotlight on all things YouTube as part of CMU Insights at the Great Escape last year. And you can still check the CMU Trends article that we published based on our presentations at last year's Great Escape, which tells the whole story of the music industry's relationship with YouTube from the early days of the video site all the way up to the current campaigns about safe harbours. And you can check that CMU Trends article on the CMU website at completemusicupdate.com. The main development in the last year, since our full-day YouTube strand at Great Escape 2016, has been the draft European Copyright Directive, which is seeking to reform copyright law across the European Union, and which includes a section specifically dealing with the safe harbour. The draft directive was published last autumn and is still going through the motions in Brussels. We're yet to see what the final safe harbour article of that copyright directive looks like, although the record industry and the music publishers are hopeful that if they can get that article into the copyright directive and passed by the European Parliament and EU Council, and therefore integrated into the copyright systems of all the member states of the European Union, which may or may not include the UK, depending on how quickly Brexit happens and how quickly this directive becomes law, then they can use that new rule to try and force the hands of YouTube. There is still some debate about whether or not it will actually work. YouTube may well, on the day this directive is passed, assuming it is passed in its current form, declare that although they're not happy with the Safe Harbour article of the European Copyright Directive, they think that they're compliant with the obligations it sets out. And then the music industry would have to test that assumption in court. So it could be years before this article, even if it is passed in its current form, actually is tested in court as to whether or not it allows the record companies and the music publishers to force the hand of YouTube. Although we don't have a specific focus on YouTube this year, as part of the Royalties Conference taking place on the Friday of Great Escape, we'll have a short presentation from Sophie Goossens looking at the European Copyright Directive, where it's at, what it says, and how and when it is likely to become law. so we'll have a quick catch-up on all things safe harbours as part of that. Back in the world of premium streaming, where all the money is being made, the last year has really been about the growth of Spotify and Apple Music worldwide. Although there are numerous streaming services around the world, it is Spotify and Apple Music that continue to have the momentum, between them adding a couple of million new paying users each month. By the end of 2016, according to the IFPI, there were nearly, although not quite, 100 million people worldwide paying to access a subscription streaming service. And when you throw in the people who are part of a family plan on those streaming platforms, 112 million people were accessing music through some sort of paid-for subscription service. In addition to Spotify and Apple Music, there are the various other startup services that have been playing in this space over recent years. Meanwhile, Amazon has entered the streaming market in a much more prolific way. Having dabbled by putting music within Amazon Prime a few years ago, it now has its standalone streaming service. For any one streaming service to last the distance and be in this game in the long term, they will need, at the minimum, tens of millions of paying users, and probably in excess of 100 million paying users. Spotify and Apple, at their current growth rate, could as yet reach that kind of scale. The chances are most of the other startup streaming services never will. However, Amazon, with its scale and its reach, could be the third platform to be a serious global player in the streaming space. The fact the record industry went back into growth in 2015 and maintained that growth last year in 2016, so that the revenues coming into the recorded music sector are now increasing year on year, is something to be welcomed and to be excited about. Although, if you want to be pessimistic, then the fact that only a very small number of services will likely last the distance and get to the kind of scale that you need to be as a streaming service to go into profit, bearing in mind that none of the streaming services are making a profit at the moment, is something that you might want to be concerned about. Will Spotify and Apple, and possibly Amazon, reach the scale that they need, which is likely more than 100 million paying users each, in order to be able to turn their streaming businesses into profitable ventures long-term that continue to pump all that streaming income into the record industry and to the music publishers and songwriters for the foreseeable future? And even if they can, and some optimists think that they will, is it good that the recorded music industry will be totally reliant on two or three global players and then possibly a handful of regional players in certain emerging markets? Bearing in mind that in the physical era, there were thousands and thousands and thousands of record shops worldwide, and even though a couple of chains may have dominated in each territory, there was no one company or two or three companies that were totally dominant across the globe. Whereas that could be where we end up with the streaming market. So if you want some doom and gloom, well, that's potentially where your concern should be with regards to the long-term future of the streaming business. That said, although it's sometimes easy to portray the music industry's digital story, its shift from CDs to downloads to streams, as if we're now in the final few chapters, at the end of which Spotify and Apple and possibly Amazon will dominate worldwide, it's also true that actually, relatively speaking, we're at the very early stages of the streaming sector. It may well be that there are new products and new services, likely products and services that appeal to a more mainstream consumer, maybe a cheaper subscription, or maybe not a subscription service at all, where people pay as they go to access certain pieces of content or certain channels for certain periods of time. There may be an assortment of new services that we haven't thought of yet, which don't exist yet, which may appear in the coming years. So it may well be that while when it comes to the $10 a month subscription services, there will be a small number of players globally on which the music industry will rely in order to keep that streaming income coming in, there may be a whole load of new suppliers down the line who appeal to the more mainstream demographic, who will also be crucial in the long-term future of the digital music sector. Meanwhile, for individual artists and labels, there's a second challenge as the streaming market matures. It's great that ever-increasing amounts of money are coming in from the subscription platforms, but how, as an artist or a label, do you ensure that you're getting your fair share of that money? There's two elements to this. First of all, there's the sustained listening challenge. Streaming only works for you as an artist or a label if people keep coming back to your music again and again and again and again. That requires a new way of doing marketing around music. It's no longer about getting people to buy your record on the day it comes out. It's about persuading people to keep coming back to your music again and again over the weeks and months and years, so that each of those payments you receive for each of the streams eventually matches what you would have made by selling a CD or a download, and actually, ultimately, you'll go into profit. We talked about this with our marketing strand at The Great Escape 2 years ago, predicting the importance that playlists would be playing in that process. And for the last 2 years, we've only seen the conversation around playlists increase. But while labels and artists and managers grapple with how to use and exploit playlists on the streaming platforms and especially services like Spotify, arguably, we also need to totally reinvent the way that labels and artists market their new releases. And we'll be returning to that challenge as part of the media conference that's taking place at The Great Escape this year, when at the end of the day, we put the spotlight on music PR and marketing strategies and ask whether, as music media evolves and as we shift ever more to streaming, if labels, promoters, artists and managers need to change the way that they engage with media and utilise social media and talk about their releases to help ensure the repeat sustained listening as the weeks and months and years go by. Of course, the other element of the debate around whether or not each player in the music community is getting their fair share of the money that's coming in from the streaming services is the good old digital pie debate that we had at CMU at The Great Escape 2 years ago. As the money flows in from Spotify, how is it shared between the record companies and the music publishers and the artists and the songwriters? The digital pie debate we started 2 years ago at The Great Escape continues, but one of the challenges around informing the digital pie debate is a lack of transparency around the way streaming money flows through the system, and all the mysteries and ambiguities that occur every time a digital dollar enters the music community and gets shared between the various different stakeholders. The transparency debate continues, and it will be one of the key features of our royalties conference this year. We'll be asking the artist, songwriter, and management community in the UK why they have turned to government and to the political community for help in getting transparency on the streaming music business and everything that happens to the money as it flows through the system, and really on the deals that are being done between the record companies and the music publishers and the collecting societies and the streaming services like Spotify and Apple Music. We'll be finding out what the artists, songwriters and managers are asking for and then considering how labels and publishers and societies might go about delivering it. The transparency debate will conclude our royalties conference at The Great Escape this year on the Friday afternoon. Moving away from the content side of the music industry, what have the key developments been in the live sector over the last 12 months? It's no secret that the secondary ticketing debate has rumbled on for much of the last year. And in fact, the campaign against ticket touting and the secondary ticketing platforms has risen again, with those who oppose touting and the resale of tickets for profit online becoming much more vocal in the last year and seeking new regulation to try and constrain the way in which touts access the tickets they sell and how the secondary ticketing platforms operate. We've been covering the various debates around secondary ticketing quite closely in CMU Daily over the last year, events both here in the UK, which have centred predominantly on the Fanfare Alliance that launched last summer, and efforts to introduce new secondary ticketing regulation through the Digital Economy Act, but also similar campaigns and calls for regulation elsewhere in the world. Most of those campaigns are ongoing, and I'm sure we'll continue to cover quite prolifically the secondary ticketing debate as it continues to evolve and develop over the next 12 months. Another big story in the live sector here in the UK in the last year was the temporary closure of Fabric, which saw its licence revoked by Islington Council last autumn after two drug-related deaths occurred at or near the venue. For a time, it looked like Fabric might be closed for the long term, although there was a happy end to the story in that negotiations continued and eventually Fabric got its licence back and reopened for business. But the whole Fabric debacle contributed to two different debates. Firstly, the ongoing debate around the nighttime economies of UK cities and the challenges faced by the clubs and gig venues that play such a crucial role supporting the music scene both locally and nationally. Those challenges are sometimes economic, but sometimes they are more about the licensing challenges that these clubs and venues face. And secondly, more specifically, the Fabric story fed into the discussion around how the live and clubbing sector monitors, regulates and controls the consumption of drugs on their premises and at their events. Fabric has been widely acclaimed for its drugs policies over the years, and yet still fell foul of its local authorities' rules. Why was that? And how can promoters and venues, local authorities and the police collaborate to ensure the safety of their customers, acknowledging the realities of drug culture? This, of course, will be a key topic of discussion at the Drugs Conference that we're presenting at The Great Escape this year. So there are some key developments on the recorded music and the live music side of the wider music business. Finally, let's go beyond the industry for a moment and think about what was probably the biggest wider news story of the last 12 months here in the UK, that being bloody Brexit. What's the music angle here? There are still a lot of unknowns around Brexit, of course, and the result of the upcoming general election could have an impact on quite how the UK exits the European Union. But while there remain many questions about how exactly Brexit will work and what the UK's relationship with the rest of the European Union will be long term, we can identify a number of ways in which Brexit will likely impact on the music industry in particular. And while we can't know the specifics of that impact just yet, it's important to identify those potential challenges ahead so that the various music industry trade bodies can lobby the UK government to ensure that its interests are on the agenda when the big negotiations that the UK has with the EU and with other countries around the world take place. In terms of the different ways that Brexit will impact on music, well, for starters, long term, it will likely have an impact on UK copyright law. Cut free from its obligation to work in harmony with the European copyright regime, UK copyright law could be reformed faster in the future, with the UK Parliament able to amend the copyright system without consulting and seeking consensus from all of the other countries within the EU. On one level, this might be a good thing. Copyright law always struggles to keep up with the rapid development of the digital world. Being able to amend regulation quicker would be a positive development. Though for the music community, there could also be a downside, which is that the big tech companies, which are often seen as the adversaries in the copyright debate in the digital age, so the likes of Google and Facebook and Apple, arguably are more influential in London with UK ministers and UK politicians than they are in Brussels with European lawmakers. Which means the big tech giants might be more likely to get their way with a standalone UK copyright system than they would with a European system. Brexit could also affect copyright in the rest of Europe. The UK has always been particularly vocal on intellectual property issues within the EU. With that voice absent from the table and the French and German influence likely to increase as a result, the copyright priorities of European lawmakers could shift in the near future. While the Brexit effect on copyright will likely take some time to emerge, the UK's exit from the EU could have a more immediate effect on the movement of physical product between Britain and continental Europe, and of course, the movement of workers. This could impact on the CD and vinyl market in the UK, which relies heavily on pressing plants elsewhere in Europe, and especially Eastern Europe, while music companies which run European operations out of London may look to base themselves elsewhere if hiring European citizens in the UK becomes tricky. But for the artist community, perhaps the biggest question Brexit poses is what does this all mean when musicians go on tour? Will a UK outside the EU result in extra costs and bureaucracy when British artists go touring around continental Europe? And will those extra costs and bureaucracy affect the ability of middle-level artists to even consider a European tour? Or to take their British crew and their British session musicians with them. At the conclusion of the Export Conference at the Great Escape this month, we're going to put the spotlight on all things Brexit and consider the different ways in which the UK exiting the European Union could impact on the music community and consider what the music industry's priorities should be when it joins the long line of lobbyists trying to influence the UK's negotiations with the EU as the Brexit process gets properly underway. That wraps up this mini online seminar preempting this year's CMU Insights at the Great Escape Conference. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing you in Brighton.